we've seen the White House and the Biden campaign try to petition to the mainstream media to attack Trump more and highlight Trump's gaffes more, because they believe that if Trump is in the media, then it's going to take away from the fact that Joe Biden, again, is talking to dead people and wearing these giant sneakers.
We're up against such a behemoth. I mean, the left is in the business of counting ballots. We're in the business of counting votes. They don't care if it's a mail-in ballot. They don't care if it's a dead person or an illegal. I would argue they're ramming this country full of illegals right now to inflate the numbers so they can have more people vote. They need to know how much they basically need to steal the election by. And honestly, I think there's a strong distrust among the MAGA base and a lot of these, you know, whether it's NRCC, the NRSC, the RNC, and that's why you've seen these donations just plummet.
Prove to me that moves have been made to get ready for 2024. Prove to anybody, prove to the people out there, prove to everyone watching the Sean Spicer Show, prove it everywhere, and you can't.
All right, guys, welcome. We've got a big episode, a great panel coming your way. Before we jump into today's episode, I want to remind you to hit that subscribe button. We've got amazing guests all week. And if you're not subscribed, well, gosh, you could be missing out and you don't want to do that. Tomorrow, we're going to talk about China with Peter Schweitzer, a big, big bestseller that he's going to break down what we need to know about China and who is accountable. We've got a lot to get into today. Election integrity, Trump's pick, not just for VP, but for his cabinet, and RFK, he's on the verge of announcing his VP. We've got a great panel headed your way. Tony Katz, the host of the Tony Katz Show. Natalie Winters, the co-host of The War Room with Steve Bannon. And Reagan Reese, the Daily Caller White House correspondent. But before we do that, I want to unpack all of those issues. Let's hear from two of our amazing sponsors that keep the show free on all of the platforms and allow us to be here with you guys every single day. If you're a longtime watcher of the show, you know about my friend Leo Grillo. Leo is the founder of Delta Rescue, and you can see a lot of the work they do at deltarescue.org. Leo started his journey by rescuing a Doberman. He named the Doberman Delta, which stands for dedication and everlasting love to animals. That became part of a lifelong mission. He founded Delta Rescue. It's a lifelong no-kill sanctuary, not a shelter, a no-kill sanctuary where dogs, cats, horses can roam freely and get the nutrition and veterinary care that they need. It's all supported by people like you and me through our contributions, $5, $10, $100, $1,000. Whatever you can do, if you're an animal lover, helps keep Delta Rescue going. And if you go to deltarescue.org, you can see some of the amazing videos of the work that they do. But also at deltarescue.org is the estate planning kit. If you can help make Delta Rescue part of your estate, that'll make Leo's mission an enduring one, one that continues well beyond all of us and the here and the now. So if you're an animal lover, please go to deltarescue.org, help in the short term with a contribution, but then also make it part of your estate planning kit. If you're like me and you're looking to secure your financial future, I have the people for you to call. Call my friends at Bishop Gold Group at 844-984-1616 or go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean and they will sit down with you, whether it's online or over the phone, and have a conversation with you about whether it's a 401k, an IRA that you might have sitting around, or just diversifying your investment strategies into precious metals, gold, silver, alike. There's a lot of buzz about these kind of groups, and I'm sure you're getting hit up by many of them. Bishop Gold Group are the people that I trust. I took my money, called them, had a conversation about how to diversify my investment strategy with precious metals. We came up with a strategy that made sense for me, and that's why I think if you want to do the same thing, you can call them. You can trust them. They know what they're talking about. They're full of integrity. And if you go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean, you can join me in diversifying your investment strategy with precious metals. Like I said, in these uncertain economic times, this is a great place to diversify your investment strategy. So join me, go to bishopgoldgroup.com/Sean, and you begin your journey with financial metals with a free promotional gift as well. All right, guys, good to see you. You know, I'm a big fan of playing the Veep Stakes game. We had a very different angle this week. Instead of somebody getting into the Veep Stakes, apparently, according to reports, it says Trump has officially ruled out Vivek Ramaswamy as his running mate. He's instead thinking him as potentially a Homeland Security secretary. Now, here's the thing, Tony Katz. That may be well and good, but if you don't have at least a 51, 52 seat majority in the Senate, I don't know how you get Vivek or anybody through, but especially a guy like Vivek, with all due respect, he's a smart businessman. but I don't know that the Senate is going to think of him as the guy when it comes to like TSA, the Coast Guard, that has the background necessarily for that job.
I just don't know why we're even bothering ourselves this early out.
It's fine.
Every now and it's fun. I mean, we're filling column inches, but I don't think we've satisfied the bigger requirements of what's life like when Biden's not the nominee, or what else are they going to throw at Trump that's going to make it difficult to get through an election season? I'm all about fun. Fun is good, but I just... Every now and then, I think that we're just trying to delude or fool ourselves, and I don't know how interested I am in filling the column inches. All right, Vivek is this, Vivek is that, Vivek is the other. He's going to be somewhere, one would assume, in the mix. I think the bigger question is, have we dotted all the I's and crossed all the T's? Has anybody figured out whether or not we're actually ready for Election Day?
Well, Natalie, you guys, you know, I know War Room deals with this a lot. You deal with it, but like, I agree with the one thing that Tony said. That I think they thought, okay, we've got we tried Russian hoax, we tried the laptop. Now we're just going to throw a ton of cases at the guy, right? We're going to bankrupt him. We're going to take him off the ballot. We're going to prosecute him criminally.
We're going to scream bloodbath every 4 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, and each time something doesn't work, I do wonder, to Tony's point, we're really early in the cycle and it's like, okay, if that didn't work, what's next?
No, you're so right. And I think when you look at this through the lens of the 2016 election, it was very clear that the establishment wing of the Republican Party was a lot more intact, right? Because they hadn't gone through 4 years, 8 years really of the MAGA base being able to vet and really force the resignations of a lot of these more establishment Republicans. But I think you've sort of seen the disintegration to some extent of a lot of that kind of holdover establishment wing of the Republican Party, which is why I think you've seen such strong lawfare happen, because they don't have, you know, whether it was the Access Hollywood tape or sort of the old tricks, right? The Never Trump movement to try to be used as a cudgel against Donald Trump like they did in 2016. Now you sort of see the establishment taking what I think is another approach. I would say it's Chinese Communist Party style lawfare to try to tank Trump and keep him off the ballot. But I think what you said is totally correct. I always thought Vivek would probably be more suited, if anything, for a Treasury role as opposed to Department of Homeland Security.
Oh, yes. See,
right?
Okay. See,
that seems like a logical thing.
Let's fill the column inches, shall we? I like that because I can see him. He gets business. He gets deals. He's played internationally with all of the things that he's done. See, that to me makes sense. I don't see how you get him confirmed as Homeland Security Secretary. See, Tony Katz, you may not want to fill column inches. I do. Reagan Reese, let me ask you this. Do you think that Vivek Ramaswamy, play the game with me, please, could get confirmed as Homeland Security Secretary?
Well, Sean, when you said you wanted to talk about maybe Vivek being out of the VP race, I was thinking you might be trying to throw us off your trail. You're not the VP pick being kept hidden, are you?
Okay, this is awkward now. No, I do think that, by the way, I will say this just for everyone. I wouldn't say that. If I were asked to be VP, I'd take it every day of the week. It's the best job ever. You have your own house. It has a fence around it. No one can come visit. There's no tours. You just go to like events and funerals. Like, I'm sorry. I think that's the greatest gig ever. I think all these people who keep downplaying the VP, I don't know what they think is fun. I actually would get a kick out of having Secret Service every day, getting driven to my house, going to the cool stuff. I remember like 5 days into the Trump White House, Pence walks into the Oval Office and he says, "Mr. President, I'll be representing us at the Super Bowl." And the president looks and goes, "It's the Patriots were playing." And he says, "Well, Mike, I think Sean likes the Patriots. Take him." And I was like, "Yes, take me." But I was like, how cool would it be to like, that's your job is to like go to the Super Bowl. I'm like, I could be VP. I have not submitted myself to vetting yet. But let me just take this one step further. I get it. I'm with Tony on this. I think there's so much more to get to. But when these stories pop, part of the reason I want to bring them out is not to fill the column inches that Tony was saying, but I actually think that it just shows to me sometimes the stupidity of the media. Like, I think Natalie talking about him being Treasury Secretary makes total sense. Homeland Security, I'm like, go figure. But the story goes on and it says, those who have impressed Trump and his team for possible cabinet roles include another former GOP primary foe, North Dakota Governor Doug Burgum, as well as Representative Elise Stefanik and former U.S. Representative, Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer. Ousted U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy is seen as a top candidate to serve as chief of staff. Now, before I have you respond to that, Tony, please keep in mind the reason I think this is interesting is chief of staff is appointed. The president can have whomever he wants as his chief of staff. The other positions all require Senate confirmation. So first, do me a favor. I think Doug Burgum would be a good cabinet member. He's a successful governor, smart businessman. I have a hard time thinking the MAGA base is going to buy into Kevin McCarthy as chief of staff.
I think it's funny that there's no doubt that the MAGA base will buy into whatever Trump decides. Even Matt Gaetz said, you know, Kevin McCarthy could run the RNC. He's organized. He knows how to raise money. He'd be a perfect choice. Now, maybe it was tongue in cheek, but it also happens to be true. Matt Gaetz's problem is if McCarthy's chief of staff, Gaetz is never getting a meeting. It's never going to happen. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe I made the scheduling error. What a mistake. But you're dead on about Burgum. He was impressive in debates. He has the whole history of selling the company to Microsoft. He has real success in North Dakota. That's a commerce guy. That's a guy you could put a bunch of places and work with. And he is a guy, to the point of Ramaswamy and Homeland Security, I would agree with you. That confirmation would be outrageously difficult. Burgum gets confirmed. Yes. You'd be hard-pressed to think this is a guy you're going to start a fight with.
Every day. Natalie, to Tony's point, though, I will tell you this. I've seen the chief of staff movie. In fact, I saw four of those movies during the first Trump administration. I think the idea of Kevin McCarthy blocking anybody from Trump might be a fallacy. He's going to call and get in whomever he wants.
No, you're so right. And on the DHS thing, I think it's important to make the point that we need to make sure, I would argue, someone who is young and has a pretty bright political future should be appointed to that role, because that means that they will actually have the drive and motivation to secure the southern border, because for the rest of their political career, they will want to be able, right, to look back and be like, look what I did when I was DHS secretary. I wasn't a Mayorkas type. I didn't open the floodgates, weld them open. Literally, I actually secured the southern border, since that's the issue that not just most Republicans, but most Americans actually care about. But I don't think the MAGA base would go for McCarthy as chief of staff. I also think in politics, sometimes we get this myopic view that I think is probably best. The best example is the fact that we never pass term limits. It's like, there's no individual who is that special, right? There are a lot of people who could serve as chief of staff. I don't know why we would need to bring back the guy who has so much baggage, at least when it comes to the MAGA movement. And while he is a good fundraiser, that's what Matt Gaetz typically says when he endorsed him for the RNC role. I think the Trump presidency has had its issues of personnel subversion and people who aren't committed to the MAGA agenda. And I think Kevin McCarthy does not have an ideological vision for this country. Look no further than his, what was it, Vision for America or Future for America when he was Speaker of the House. I don't think that he would be a good fit for that role for a host of reasons, but I don't think the MAGA base would support it, even if Trump came out to really endorse him for it.
All right, before I move on to this, and I want to start with you, Reagan. We are officially in the general election phase of the election. When Trump chose Mike Pence as his VP in the 2016 cycle, he chose him literally while we were starting the convention in Cleveland. I mean, I remember getting on a plane, flying to New York, because he's like, I'm going to unveil the guy, right? Now that the general election is going to be so much longer. I mean, we didn't make Trump the nominee, the presumptive nominee, until after the Indiana primary in May of 2016. That being said, when do you think it makes sense for Trump to pick his VP from, say, today going forward?
I think it makes the most sense when Joe Biden shows that he might be at his weakest.
When's that?
Maybe Trump a little bit more of more like power. Right now, I mean, Sean, he seems to be really flailing in the polls. Maybe you do it after the elections today, where we show maybe there's going to be more of a protest vote with Joe Biden when he's making some gaffes on the campaign trail. I think any time to me seems like a good time for Trump, as Joe Biden continues to fall lower in approval ratings, make more mistakes, wear these giant black sneakers to keep him from falling as he boards Air Force One.
Yeah, by the way, I should have brought up the sneaker thing. I'm glad you hit on that. It literally looks like one of those things like that you see like an old person's home, or that it's like he's wearing a boat.
Of course it is.
It's like, I know.
It's
like
an old person's home.
God.
It's Tony. It's a bumper car kind of looking thing.
They weren't just shoes. Someone reported was talking about them being Hokas. I love Hokas, but yeah. I thought they were actually that they looked like they had a raft around them, like a bubble. So it was a black shoe. Maybe they are Hokas, but I kind of felt like they were the ones that you can't tip over.
No, it's offensive to Hokas, Sean. I wear Hokas on my runs. They're stylish. They're in right now. That's offensive to Hokas.
That is offensive. Tony Katz, I know you, even if you don't think that Biden will be the nominee or that that's a worthy discussion, which it is, in the convention in August. Before that, Trump will pick a VP. Their convention on the Republican side is July. When should Trump pick a VP?
I wouldn't unveil the VP if I'm Trump, thinking in his just, you know, TV parlance, until you know who the nominee is for the Democrats.
Okay, do you think that is? When? Give me.
I think that's the Democratic convention.
To have a nominee. The nominee of the Republican Party has to be chosen in July when the convention.
Okay, so then you would have to pick in July. You would unveil at the convention. I think as late as possible is the argument that I would make. As late as possible. The last thing you need to give is media more time to be beating somebody up, which of course is going to happen. It doesn't matter who Trump picks in that regard. Whoever they are, as they often said, you were there. Trump is Hitler and Pence is worse. I mean, they would say these things, and anybody else who got picked would be worse. Oh, Ron DeSantis, if he had been the nominee, worse than Hitler. You hear those horrible, awful kinds of things all the time. So have it be as late as possible to have the least amount of that horrific kind of sentiment from news media and from the left.
All right, Natalie Winters, I need you to decide Tony Katz versus Sean Spicer. Tony Katz, as late as possible for the aforementioned reasons. The Sean Spicer argument, if you pick someone sooner, it adds another person on the campaign trail that can go out and do events, number one. Number two, you can use them to raise money. Where do you come down on the Tony Katz epic battle with Sean Spicer for VP timing?
I think that I would go with option C, which is that I think it would be contextual for who he picks. And what I mean by that is if he goes with, right, a member of the House, I would say announce them if they actually get their act together and forge ahead on Biden impeachment proceedings and there's some actual traction there. If they go more the route of, say, a Kristi Noem or a governor type, you know, when they introduce legislation that, say, is, for example, blocking the Chinese Communist Party from buying farmland, like, I would make it organic and pounce off of that, because at the end of the day, you know, people are voting for Trump. It's the Trump effect. It's certainly Trump's party. I would say probably later the better. I'm not a politicking expert, but I just think it's contextual.
Okay. Reagan, can you help solve the battle now? Because I
lean in my direction. I like it.
60-40.
Oh, Sean, this is hard.
No, it's not. It's my show. You'd have to be with me. If you go on the Tony Katz show, you should be with him every day.
Sean, this is what victory feels like.
You make a good point about the more media hits on, and then, I think I'm going to make a good point here on more media, you know, attacks on this vice president. We've seen the White House and the Biden campaign try to petition to the mainstream media to attack Trump more and highlight Trump's gaffes more, because they believe that if Trump is in the media, then it's going to take away from the fact that Joe Biden, again, is talking to dead people and wearing these giant sneakers. And so they think that might help boost them in the polls. And so why give them that? Why give them the power to attack somebody else and give them what they want?
You know what I just read? That's you're siding with Tony Katz. I knew it. That was a very diplomatic answer. All right, before I get to the next topic, I want to do a quick yes or no on the following. Do Trump and Biden debate in the fall for the general election at any point? Is there a debate, Reagan, yes or no?
No.
Natalie?
No.
Tony?
They're both right. The answer is no.
I see. I am with you Lindsay Keith, my former co-host, was with us a couple weeks ago, and she said they're going to come up with an excuse and say he supports bloodbaths and therefore we can't debate him. They're going to come up with an excuse to say we would debate, but he's just so bad we don't want to dignify it. And I actually finally bought into this argument that you guys are all right, because they don't want him up there. They just need to find the excuse that the media will be able to say, okay, that's okay. Speaking of VPs, though, the other big VP news is RFK Jr. saying that he is going to select his VP. I think it's March 26th in Oakland. Early on, there was discussions about Mike Rowe being a potential person. He's had conversations with other politicians. I'm trying to think, look at the list here. But there's now a lot of scuttle that this Nicole Shanahan, a Bay Area lawyer who helped pay for his Super PAC Super Bowl ad, is his pick. I don't ever believe that Reagan, that VP picks are that big of a deal, but if you have to ask who they are, I don't know that that helps.
No, it doesn't. I don't find this news to be particularly newsworthy to begin with. My eyes have been on President Biden and President Trump. They haven't been on RFK Jr. I think the Aaron Rodgers thing brought a lot of fanfare to the pick. That's when I started paying attention. RFK Jr. is about to make a VP pick. I thought that was interesting. I thought that would have been interesting because I think that really would have stuck it to woke NFL, like Aaron Rodgers is partnering with RFK Jr. in this presidential race. But the whole thing hasn't really created a lot of fanfare in my mind. I know it's been covered, but I didn't find it to be particularly worthy of much of my attention.
Natalie, I think if he had chosen Aaron Rodgers, I actually think it would have gotten a ton of attention to Reagan's point. Like, I don't see how it would have ever worked. You can't be like, on Sundays, I'm going to start as quarterback for the Jets. And then Monday through Saturday, I'm out there in, you know, Wisconsin, Georgia, and Arizona. But I think if it's truly Nicole Shanahan, aside from her apparently having a ton of money, I just don't, I think that this starts to add to the fizzle of the campaign for RFK.
I certainly agree with Reagan. I haven't been totally focused on the RFK Jr. campaign, but I think why I was particularly interested in his VP pick is that I think there's been a kind of age-old debate as to who does the RFK campaign hurt more, right, Trump or Biden? And I think that the VP pick was sort of a window into who it could potentially draw more voters from, or at least just sort of elucidate, you know, the money behind him. Like, if it's sort of an op to go after the Trump campaign, the Biden campaign, to pull voters away from Joe Biden. And I feel like the VP pick offered no clarity on that debate because it's just sort of a rando. And I mean that in a respectful way. But it's an interesting pick. I don't think it really makes much sense.
In a very respectful way, it's a rando. Tony Katz, does this, I mean, I don't think, like I said, I don't think VPs matter much anyway. No one's voting for that person, but they could have, I think it would have gotten him a lot more attention if it was a name that we knew. It would have caused Reagan and Natalie to engage. You know, I mean, that's basically what they're saying is, well, my eyes weren't there. And I think they speak for a lot of people who were like, yeah, whatever. But suddenly you talk about Aaron Rodgers or Mike Rowe or somebody of that name with a name. I think a lot of people would have been like, wow, and re-engaged with RFK maybe.
I would have loved to have seen Aaron Rodgers in the White House, bringing mustaches back to the White House with a dream. His Secret Service code name would have been Achilles. Just everything would have been wonderful.
So
and
you,
terrific
unlike
with
them,
it.
Unlike Reagan and Natalie, you really thought this out.
Oh, yeah, I've spent time on this. I have mapped this out like I've been in Aaron Rodgers' basement figuring out a conspiracy theory about COVID. I have worked this on every single angle. I find something about Kennedy's possible pick kind of interesting, that his pick is somebody who is connected to the biggest tech out there. She was in a relationship with one of the either with the YouTube founders, one of the Google founders. There's a real large big tech connection there. And I think that's a little weird for a guy like Robert Kennedy, who has been so aggressive and in conversations about free speech and how they have suppressed speech, whether it be about COVID information or whatever the case may be. It is a little bit odd and peculiar. But I think your point matters, and what Reagan and Natalie saying matters. That if you're going to want to get a splash, get the attention back, get some momentum, pretend you're really in this, you make a splash kind of pick. You do something that is going to get people talking about you. I don't think that somebody no one has heard of is that helpful, although the tech connection is interesting. He still has time. He can still go in a lot of directions. And there's a fair amount of people, I think, who would say yes to him.
When things go south and there's a crisis, whether it's for a day, a week, a month, maybe even months, will you be ready? I am. Because I got the Patriot Power Generator 2000X. And if you go to 4patriots.com/Spicer, you can join me in getting one of these. The best part about the Patriot Power Generator 2000X is that when something happens, you lose power for whatever reason. Maybe it's an attack on the grid. Maybe it's a natural disaster, whatever. You will be ready. You can plug in your refrigerator, your tablets, your medical devices, your computer, your phones, so that you, your family, and your loved ones are taken care of during a crisis. Think about how important that is. Here's what makes the Patriot Power Generator 2000X different. It runs off solar power, and the panels come free with it. You put it out, it charges the generator. Then when you bring the Patriot Power Generator into your house, there's no fumes, there's no noise. You plug into one of the several ports that exist, and you can bring it back outside. No gas, no smells, no fumes, no additional things to do. This is securing your future for you, your family, your friends. Go to 4patriots.com/Spicer and join me by getting a Patriot Power Generator 2000X to be ready when emergencies occur. So, Reagan, the thing that's interesting to me is I have dismissed him largely for a while because he didn't have ballot access. And if your name isn't on a ballot and no one can vote for you, then who cares? But he's starting to apparently get that. His super PAC has chipped away at some of the key battleground states, and he will appear on the ballot. The thing is, I agree with everything that Tony said about the VP pick for RFK. But if you're trading name ID for somebody with boatloads and endless pockets of cash, you might be able to buy some of that name ID and fund a campaign in a different way that, you know, if you put Aaron Rodgers on the ticket, yeah, you'll get some attention. But it'll be a flash in the pan per se. If I don't know what the deal is, if this woman is willing to contribute heavily with her own money to the campaign or not, or what she would be committing to do. But if she's willing to put some of that tech money to work, you can do a lot with that in terms of name ID, ads, ballot access, ground game, et cetera. And maybe he's making the smart business decision.
Sure. I think that can all be fair, but I still think you're reasonable to dismiss him as a candidate. I still think I would, you know, want to dismiss him as a candidate until I saw something substantial that convinced me otherwise, because we see a really strong force behind President Trump. We see a ton of money behind the Democrats and Joe Biden that I just have a lot of doubts that RFK Jr. can put together something, no matter how much money he had, that would, you know, make a notable impact. Maybe he then ends up making a bigger dent in Trump or Biden. I do think it might end up hurting Biden more in the long run, but maybe that would be something to watch.
So, Natalie, the thing that I think is interesting is I've talked about this before. You look at Michigan in 2016, 10,000 votes. Arizona and Georgia in the 2020 election, 10,000, 20,000 votes. Wisconsin, 20,000 votes. You don't need to win if you're RFK. You just need to tilt the scale enough by a few thousand voters, and you suddenly change the outcome of the election, right? I mean, you take Michigan's 15 electoral votes, Wisconsin's 10 electoral votes, Arizona's 11, and start screwing with them because he gets, you know, 15, 20,000 votes, and that's game over. So this goes back to the point that was just made. Who do you think he pulls from more right now?
Ooh, I think that's a really tough question. I honestly think that he pulls more from Biden. I think he's worse for Biden than he is for Trump. I think maybe I tend to agree with you that maybe this VP pick is more just for funding and financial reasons, because then you could just announce someone like Aaron Rodgers as like a chief advisor, you know, on the campaign and kind of get a similar PR spin. But I think if you look at RFK Jr. as someone who was just trying to kind of force the unrecognizable Democratic Party to come back to its roots, or just have topics about how they, or have talks rather, about how they have become so beholden, particularly to Big Pharma. I think that that is really a question more of just him getting his name out there. And frankly, I think an independent voter who is not decidedly in the camp of Trump or Biden, I think that they would be more likely to be pulled by what RFK Jr. is saying away from Biden than they would be Trump.
I think regardless, there's no question. I think we're in for another close election. And the issue of voter integrity is something I hear almost every day. People are very concerned about will their vote count? What are the Democrats doing to manipulate the system? And Reagan, you had a great piece in the Daily Caller. I want to read a little bit of it for, just to give some people context. You said, in 2020, a number of election laws were changed and others were straight up ignored in key states due to the COVID-19 pandemic. In swing states like Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Arizona, voters had expanded access to methods of voting, including ballot drop boxes, mail-in voting, and early voting, thanks to Democrat legal efforts led by Mark Elias, the super lawyer on that. You go on to say a number of key battleground states, including those that delivered Biden the presidency, are still slated to use many of the election procedures in 2024 that outraged Republicans in 2020. How do they get away with this, Reagan, that they did it all under the guise of COVID, even though even Fauci said that you didn't need to do all this stuff? And now they're continuing to do it. How do they get away with that?
So Democrats had a 40-year head start, Sean. So Republicans are in a position where they're playing catch up. And yeah, there are still a handful of states that have these laws in place in swing states. The RNC was under a consent decree in 1980, and that was lifted in 2018. What we found out through our conversations with the RNC is that between 2020 and 2022, they started to do some election integrity efforts. And that was described to me by an RNC official as like proof of concept. And that's what they were doing, just kind of poking around, getting their feet underneath them. In 2023, former co-chairwoman Ronna McDaniel finally moved to make the election integrity aspect of the RNC an actual division of the party, which then allowed them to pull resources from comms, from political aspects, and get more funding and actually put an actual effort behind this. So when you look at this, Sean, this real full-throated effort has only been in place for about a year. And so that's why you're still seeing these states that have all of these measures still available for the 2024 election. Not to say that the RNC isn't really making a push. They're partnered with the NRCC and the NRSC on this effort. They've filed, I think today, the final number would be 80 lawsuits in the election integrity sphere. But there's still a lot of work to be done.
So, Natalie, in Reagan's piece, one of the things that she talks about or she acknowledges in the piece is that there are officials that talk about the cases that they filed and the efforts that they made. And they say, well, no one knows that we've done this. And I wonder, as someone like you who has your finger on the pulse of people, are you aware of what they've been doing? And do you think it's enough?
Well, from an action and results perspective, I would say, heck no. And if their defense is that, oh, well, we've been doing a lot, we just haven't been able to get the word out or communicate it, I would say, if you can't communicate what you've been doing, then what you've been doing probably isn't all that important. And I highly doubt you to be able to actually secure elections if you don't know how to navigate conservative media outlets. It's not that difficult of a landscape. I think we've really seen kind of outside groups have to come in and fill the void, to be frank. But we're up against such a behemoth. I mean, the left is in the business of counting ballots. We're in the business of counting votes. And that's not a distinction without a difference, right? They don't care if it's a mail-in ballot. They don't care if it's a dead person or an illegal. I would argue they're ramming this country full of illegals right now to inflate the numbers so they can have more people vote. They need to know how much they basically need to steal the election by. And meanwhile, the RNC is like, oh, well, we filed, 80 lawsuits. Well, Mark Elias has filed hundreds and he's one person. And honestly, I think there's a strong distrust among the MAGA base in a lot of these, whether it's NRCC, the NRSC, the RNC, and that's why you've seen these donations just plummet. Because look, I'm glad they've set up a nice, you know, an election integrity fund. But what are they doing? It seems like when you see the financial reports, it seems like they're just buying themselves nice gifts and flowers and nice retreats. So I don't think the RNC is the answer to the problem at all. I don't think they have a solution. I think they just want to fundraise money and give it to their kind of handpicked establishment candidates who are also affected by poor election integrity, but they always somehow seem to like skate through.
I got to tell you, I
was going to say, you talk to people every day, Tony, and that's where, like on the radio, you're hearing from the when you interact with these folks, one, how big of an issue is it? How high is that on the radar between illegal immigration and all the other things that are happening to us? And two, do you think, or do your listeners feel like there's actually progress being made?
I think the subject is so big. I actually talked about this story, this exact piece, Reagan, on my show, listed it there on my daily show sheet over at TonyKatz.com.
Sucking up to Reagan Reese. I like it. That's smart, Tony Katz.
And doing some promotion and now sucking up to Natalie. And I would argue that this isn't just a conversation about the MAGA base. The idea of what the hell does the Republican Party do and what are they doing for me lately is a major conversation. And whether any of you are friends with Rona McDaniel or not, the feeling is, and I think that the proof is in the reality, that these things were not addressed efficiently. If we want to argue, regardless of anything else about 2020, that the political right got shellacked by the political left on just the legalese, on the lawyering in 2020, prove to me that moves have been made to get ready for 2024. Prove to anybody, prove to the people out there, prove to everyone watching the Sean Spicer Show, prove it everywhere. And you can't. So I think that this conversation is huge. So election integrity is we want to be able to trust the vote. And yes, the political right has to learn that if they ballot harvest, you have to ballot harvest. And if they ballot cure, you have to ballot cure until you can get to a place where you can actually make elections make sense. And right now, they don't. So those things do matter. But I think there's a kind of follow-up here to which, do you trust that the Republican Party is even willing to fight when the moment comes? They haven't shown that, at least in any level of presentation, they haven't shown that yet.
So it's interesting, Reagan, since you wrote this, and I acknowledge that part in your story, this touches on what Tony's saying. Here's all these states that didn't obey their laws and their regulations under the guise of COVID, this health emergency, we have to let you drop your ballot wherever you want. We have to get to mail it to everybody. And then, you know, you write this in the story, at least seven are slated to deploy ballot drop boxes. Nearly all are likely to have no excuse absentee voting. Five are on track to have more than 2 weeks of early voting. In Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, North Carolina will mail out absentee ballots more than 6 weeks before Election Day. So this gets to Tony's point. You can talk about how many lawsuits you filed, but this doesn't look like anything's happening. They used the COVID pandemic as an excuse to change how we vote. The pandemic's well over, and we're still going through with this because clearly our side has not been accepted, has not been successful in doing what Tony's talking about.
Yeah, another point I want to make is that why you're seeing some of these laws still in place is that Republicans are in a bit of a balancing act. They're walking the tightrope where they're pursuing things like legal ballot chasing and get out the vote efforts. We saw this with the NRCC. When we reached out to them and found out through our conversations with the RNC that the NRCC and the NRSC were bankrolling this efforts and working with them, we approached the NRCC. We said, hey, we want to do an interview and kind of tout your election integrity efforts. And the response I got back was an Axios link to their get out the vote efforts and just like a one sentence response.
When I saw that, by the way, I've been doing political comp for almost 30 years. I don't look it. I know it. I know you if you're listening to the audio, go over to the video. Look, I use moisturizer. I get it. But the bottom line is I could not believe the response from the NRCC. I was like, she's trying to tout your efforts to right a wrong. And I was like, what did you do to offend them? That was my answer because I was like, this is way out of line.
Yeah. So we followed up two additional times over the course of several days trying to explain, hey, no, this Axios piece is not what we want to talk about. We want to talk about your litigation and the RNC, my reporting has been critical of their debate process in the past, and they were still willing to tout this election integrity efforts and sit down for 35 minutes with me and talk about it. And finally, we called them out on it and said it was some of the laziest stuff we've ever seen. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to swear, but there was a curse word in there. And the response we got back was, you know, we've complained to your editors numerous times about your coverage, and quote, we don't really care to engage on pieces we don't really care about to help you guys out, end quote. And to me, on pieces we don't really care about to help you guys out, that's a red flag.
Yeah. I do want to hit one more topic before we wrap up today. Natalie, I don't even know that it was news. Mike Pence announced the other day that he would not be endorsing Donald Trump. And I'm not trying to be disrespectful when I say this, but I don't know that anyone cares. but I was initially, I don't know. I thought to myself, maybe he just keeps his mouth shut, doesn't say anything, doesn't endorse him. But to come out and say, I'm not going to endorse him, I thought was a lot further than a lot of these other folks that maybe just haven't endorsed him, right? So you have, I'm going to endorse him. That's the extreme on one side. I endorse him, but not really full-throated. Then the, I'm just not going to say anything is sort of the number three position. And then I think number four is, I'm going to say I'm not with him, I'm against him. I was actually shocked to see Pence go all the way to number four. I thought he'd be somewhere in the middle, which is just to use weasel words and say, I'm not committed yet to whatever, but whatever. Were you shocked at all that he came out against him?
Of course, when you were describing that, the image that I conjured in my mind was the old man from The Simpsons screaming at the cloud. Like, I feel like that's Mike Pence. Like, does anyone care what you have to say? Like you said, it's just rude. But I think, honestly, you know what? I think it dovetails quite nicely with what Reagan just said about those people from the RNC who you were emailing with. I mean, what a narcissistic response. Oh, we don't care about election integrity because you've been—
It was the NRCC,
sort of,
by the way, just
the
to
NRCC,
be clear.
Right, you've been sort of critical of us. Like, we don't really want to help you out. It's sort of like a Mike Pence thing. It's like just desperate to be relevant. It's like, well, I'm going to give my thoughts on something that no one has asked me about. And actually, the American people have like wholeheartedly rejected me, but I'm just going to try to stay relevant. And I think it really just shows how a lot of people, of course, all of us on the panel excluded, who are drawn to politics, like there's just something not right. They're fueled by it's big ego, a lot of narcissism. And I think that Mike Pence story is a perfect example of that.
So Tony Katz, I had a theory on this that I want you to validate. Because somebody asked me, why would he do this? Like, he's always been a loyal guy. So here's this way, it's just mano a mano. You know, we're not bringing you're not having Reagan come defend you this time. So I think that the reason he did this is because if you're younger, you might think, I have a political career that I want to save or salvage, and therefore I'm going to want to get on board or whatever. The reason he went to number four, that extreme, as I was laying out, is I think that it comes down to money. That if you want to go out and give political speeches and you want to be on boards, then all these woke boards want to be able to have a token Republican, but they need to be able to say, but he was against Trump, right? And so how do you carve out that niche? Well, you carve it out by saying, I'm a hardcore conservative, but I was against Trump.
So understand that Mike Pence is not too far from where I sit right now in Indiana. The seat that I have on radio for my second show, my syndicated show, is the seat that Mike Pence used to have when he used to be a radio host. I was in the room at that primary. You talk about the Indiana primary where Donald Trump put Ted Cruz in the trunk. I was in the room when he was on the air on WIBC speaking to radio host Greg Garrison when he said that he was endorsing Ted Cruz, but he really liked that Donald Trump. He thought he was a really interesting guy. The idea that Pence would say, I am a believer in this. This is how I feel. This is how I believe, and I'm going to say it, is the most Mike Pence thing in the world. It's exactly the reason why he never should have run for president. He is a guy who truly believes in this idea of servant leadership. Say anything about him you want. This is who the guy is. To your point, Sean, sorry, Reagan and Natalie, Sean's correct on this one. There is absolutely no doubt that he said exactly what he believes. I can't bring myself to endorse him, whether it be January 6th or any other thing, but it does position him well to be a conservative voice in a populist world and give him an opportunity. I don't know if it'll necessarily be for some board, some company, but certainly a speaking circuit, certainly other TV and book opportunities. If you're going to be separated, you might as well give a grand separation and try and set yourself apart as something that people could be interested in. I think there is that undoubtedly.
This is the perfect place to end then, because you endorsing me. But anyway, guys, thank you guys for an awesome Thursday panel. I love the discussion, and we had actually a lot more to get to today, but you did it great. And we had to end on Tony saying nice things about me. For all of you out there, we've got a great show headed your way tomorrow. Peter Schweitzer is here. He's going to break down everything that we need to know about China, the threat that it poses, and more importantly, who is responsible for not fixing it. He names names. I'm going to push him on this. Great discussion here. So make sure that you're subscribing on YouTube, Rumble, Spotify, Apple, all those things. Hit the notification button. And if you can take a little second or two on Apple, hit that 5-star review. We always appreciate it. We go mano a mano with 5-star reviews and Tony Katz. We've got to beat him this week. We'll see you right back here tomorrow. Thanks for being here. Bye-bye.